religious Zionism. But as you'll see, this is a shamble of the year. Religious Zionism is a lot more than Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, and Torah Yisrael. The philosophy of Rav Kook, have you ever heard of Rav Kook?
Yes.
Have you learned any of the Kook books? Rav Kook, you could say in Israel, is like the, he's called the Rav. I guess they could say the parallel of Rav Soloveitchik for Rav Moshe Feinstein in America. Rav Kook was the chief rabbi in Israel, the first chief rabbi. He was universally considered one of the Gedolei Ador, the great poskim of his generation. The Netziv of the legend, for example, said of him that that it would have been worth it just to set up the legend yeshiva just to produce one Rav Kook. Like a lot of original thinkers, he was about two generations ahead of his time. And that's why he passed away in 35. About 30 years after he passed away, that's when his philosophy really caught on. And all of his farim are called Orot. And what we're going to learn today is Orot Tshuva. Orot, as you know, means light. And as you'll see, Rav Kook has a very light, a very positive approach to everything. It's considerably different from any other approach that you've ever learned before. That's one of the reasons why he was so controversial. Usually when Chodesh Elul comes around, people in the yeshivot, you know, they learn a lot of Musar, they're into Chatati, Aviti, Pashati, and they don't really like Tshuva. And I admit myself, when I was in high school, I hated that certain way Tshuva, because my Rebbe always used to tell me, you know, you're bad, you're Bittul Torah, you talk Lashon Hara, and you're lazy, and he's right. You know, nobody likes to feel bad about themselves. And as you'll see, Orot Tshuva is a totally, totally different approach. The idea is not to get you down, but to be positive. Okay, I'll just say one last word of introduction before we get into it. One of the problems with Tshuva is I gave a lecture in the army 2 days ago. When you mention the word Tshuva to non-religious, they say to themselves, what are you talking about? Us? You know, go to the shul and talk about Tshuva. That's for the religious. On the other hand, you go to somebody who's religious, you talk to them about Tshuva, you say, well, I'm religious, go talk to somebody who's not religious, right? So Tshuva falls in between the seats. And as you'll see in Rav Kook, he has an answer to that problem. Okay, let's see it inside. Ha'olam mochrachu lavo lidei tshuva shlema. You guys know basic Hebrew? Mochrach is must. The world inevitably is going to do total tshuva. Now, obviously, the question is, how does Rav Kook know that? When you see a sentence like this, how do you understand that? The world is going to do tshuva. A religious Jew, he says, well, I believe in Mashiach. You know, Mashiach, everyone's supposed to do tshuva, and I guess that's what he's talking about. But here you have to remember, Rav Kook is writing his philosophy also for non-religious. And that's one of the beautiful things in the writings of Rav Kook, that it's very logical. He doesn't take axioms. He doesn't say, well, if it says in the Torah that there's going to be Mashiach, so there must be. He's going to prove to you that it's very logical, that everyone is going to do tshuva. How does he know that? In ha'olam davar omed al mitzav echad, because the world is not static. The world is dynamic. Kim holechu umitpateach, it's always evolving. The world is constantly improving. Vayitpatchuta, by the way, the word hitpatchut, evolution, what is that ring a bell? You learned the theory of evolution in high school? Darwin? Darwin's theory came out right before Rav Kook is writing this, and it shook the world. And he basically proved conclusively, today we know that he wasn't 100% right, but even if it was 60% right, you know, the Catholics excommunicated him. They said, you know, it says in the Torah the world was created in 6 days, and Darwin comes with this idea of survival of the fittest. And basically, he proved a good case, right? Did you remember that, the pepper moths? How did Darwin prove his case? Sorry?
mock someone and change color when they have exactly. Sex. Exactly.
Oh, I see they still teach that. He noticed that that mock.
Was it 10th grade?
Was it 10th grade?
We had probably in 9th grade, but our teacher wasn't really.
A little shy. He lived in England, Darwin, and he noticed he grew up that moths are white, as they are in most countries. And he was living right around the technological revolution, they started building factories. And at the time, nobody cared. They didn't even know about pollution and the problems that technology and factories cause. And London really very quickly started turning black. And he noticed that the moths, within 2-3 years, there were no more white moths. And he checked it out. And he found that the white-colored moths, when they were seen on the dirty trees and dirty buildings, they were pecked off. And they were eaten by the birds. As opposed to the darker pepper-colored moths, birds can't see them because they blended in with the buildings. And it just hit him that that's the idea that evolution is built in a way that the fittest survive. Right? Why aren't there no more dinosaurs? Because their bodies were so big and their brain was too small and they needed a lot of food and they weren't quick enough to compete with the lions and everything. So there are no more dinosaurs today. Sorry?
There weren't any lions when they died out yet. The small, biggest mammals were the size of a rat nowadays.
The biggest what?
Mammals that then were the size of a modern rat.
Yeah, that's what they teach today. They didn't teach that in my days. Science is always changing. One thing's for sure, the evolution of the world, it's part of science, right? The fact that you guys, you're young, but you don't know that every couple of years, maybe you heard they have to come up with new types of vaccinations, new types of antibiotics. Because what happens? The germs are killed by the antibiotics.
Some that are resistant.
The stronger ones, exactly, they're resistant, and then you have to come up with a new one. And the truth is, the whole world is based on evolution, right? When a child starts out by crawling, then learns to walk, and then it learns to run, and it goes to first grade, and high school, and then college, and comes to yeshiva. Your whole life is growing, right? And toothpaste is always new and improved. Right? Because it's built into the world, the fact that if there's competition, you have to be better, otherwise they'll pass you. And you have to, you guys play competitive sports? Follow?
Well, follow, yes. I've played in
so
years.
Did you, there was a guy in the 50s before my time named Hank Luzzetti, who invented the jump shot. Before that, if you ever see old films of NBA games, he used to shoot. Two-hand set-shot. Ever see that in old films? Anyway, this guy, Hank Luzzetti, came up with this idea. Jump shot. He invented it, and it was so effective that he changed the Fosbury flop. If you look at the old, you know what I'm talking about? In the Olympics, in the old Olympics before Fosbury was in the 60s, the high guys used to take a running jump straight ahead. And this guy, Fosbury, must have been a creative guy. He thought of this in practice one day. He was a professional jumper.
Definitely completely, I read something, it was completely accidental.
Yeah.
He just kind of misjumped and found that he went higher.
Maybe that's a part of the story. I just know that the first time I was in a practice, and he broke his personal record. And the first competition that he did it, he broke the world record. And do you think anybody jumps the old way anymore? Because that's the way evolution is. Right? Do you know that if you follow sports, if you check the Olympic records of 1896, the first Olympics in Athens, the men 100 years ago, even 10 years ago, are running at the same speed as women today. Why? And today men are running that much faster. Right? Why is every generation, people are running faster, people are stronger, people are bigger, people are healthier? What?
Performance enhancements, so consist.
Sorry?
PEDs.
Oh. Okay, so that could be a reason, and then the judges have to decide, is it illegal or is it illegal? Okay, in other words, chemicals. It could be, let's say, an illegal way of diet, right? Coaches learn training diets, which coaches learn new techniques, right? Bikitsur, everything in the world is always improving, right? You come to Shiro with a computer.
It's recording.
Would you believe it's recording? Ooh.
10 minutes, 27 seconds.
I didn't even realize that. Okay. You won't believe it, but my fifth grade class trip, we went to see the computer. That was the class trip. And today, computers and cell phones and everything is improving, right? So technology is improving, sports is improving, the monkeys are improving, toothpaste is improving. Rav Kook is saying, the most natural thing in the world is to improve. You see where he's going with that tshuva? Because tshuva is not just for somebody who's a sinner. He started at zero, he went to minus one, and tshuva erases that minus and brings you back to zero. No, even if you're the biggest tzaddik in the world, the most natural thing in the world is to rise. And that's what evolution is about. That's also the individual and also mankind. Rav Kook goes on. So how does he know that the world is going to do tshuva? Not only because I'm religious and I believe in the Tanakh that there's going to be a geula, but he says it's logical. Because Ein HaOlam Davar Omeid HaMatzav Echad, the world is not static. The world is dynamic. It's always changing and it's always improving. Holecho mitpateach. Veitpatchut ha'amitit hashlema muchrachat hi la'avir ot ha'bruyot ha'gmura. And the complete health, the healthy approach of learning from your mistakes, of competition. These are all klalim, which are built into the world. The evolution is one of the basic ground rules of the world. Will bring the bryuta gemura hachomit v'haruchamit. Right, till now, most of the examples that we gave are on the physical world. Like we said, sports records are improving, health is improving, technology is improving. Also, morality, the ruchaniyut, is also improving. Now, obviously, we have terrible problems in the world today, but if you ever learned a little history, and you compare the world with what was in the time of the paganists, anybody ever read the Codex of Hammurabi? Have you heard of it?
Excerpt.
Sorry?
I have to read an excerpt in sixth grade.
It's the most famous Canaanite law. It's about 3,700 years old, but parallel to the time of Avraham Avinu. And what's unique about it is it's the only law where it says, Lo tirtzach, thou shalt not kill. But you're allowed to kill most people. You're not allowed to kill a free man. You're allowed to kill a slave. You're allowed to kill your wife. You're allowed to kill your children. And this is the most moral code, right? Even what was the highest level of frumkeit in the paganist world?
Believing in God, and that's it.
But in the paganist world, what's the highest act of frumkeit?
Human
sacrifice. Kill, burn your own child. Now, give me a break. Thank God the world has evolved. You look today at the world, it's hard to believe that when I was a kid, do you know that half, I'm sure you read about it, half of the states, the United States, had you couldn't sit together on the buses. Blacks had water fountains for themselves, benches for themselves, blacks had to sit in the back of the bus. You know what I'm talking about this? Right? And I'm not talking about 100 years ago. I'm talking about when I was a little younger than you. Okay? Chauvinism. Anybody ever watch any reruns of I Love Lucy? Mm-hmm. Right? You ever notice the role of women, how much it's changed? You know what I'm talking about?
I don't think Lucy's picture of women in the
family. No, but the relationship to her, the way your husband relates to her, that was the way that was accepted, not just a natural. Look at the honeymooners, look at any old show. Thank God the world is evolving, the world is improving. You look at imperialism. And it used to be that every king tried to conquer the world. It used to be the kings, monarchs, tyrants, that was the way of the world. Thank God the world is evolving, the world is improving. Now, democracy isn't perfect, and there still is a little racism in the world, but at least today, do you see we're going in the right direction? And that's where Cook writes in, let's jump for a second to, source 6. Ha'aliyot va'yiridot hen tadiriyot. There are a lot of ups and downs in life. B'matzav ha'adam ha'yachid, regarding the individual, right? Anybody who lives a life where it's just smooth sailing, that's not natural. I have a friend who's a doctor who says that when you go in the hospital and you see a straight line, it's a sign that you're dead. You know what I'm talking about? You got a monitor. The way of the world is ups and downs. The same thing with the individual, the same thing with mankind. ובמצב העולם בכללו, ומכל מקום התנועה בכללה היא תנועה עלייה וביסור. However, the way of the world, at first, Rav Kook said, the way of the world is evolution, right? Constant improvement. The same thing, the individual is always growing, so is mankind. Okay? Now, if you would have a magnifying glass and look at this line, what would it really look like? Moshe? What does this line do? You'd have a magnifying glass. I can't draw a straight line. Nobody can draw a straight line. There's no such thing as a straight line. If you'd have a magnifying glass, you realize that the world is based on ups and downs, right? For example, let's take the cell phone. The cell phone is a fantastic adaptive device, right? Recently, they're talking about the problem of the radiation of Korea that may cause cancer, right? Have you heard about that? You know, these earphones and stuff like that. I'm not a scientist, but I can guarantee you what's going to be the next step, the next cell phone, or one of the next cell phones that's going to come out. Your cell phone with less radiation, right? Because everything's advancing. There are problems, that's the down, but that's what's called in the words of Chazal, Yirida Litzorech Aliyah. It says in the Zohar, in Kabbalah, it says that the physical world is a hint to the metaphysical, to the spiritual world. Now, in the physical world, if you want to jump, first you have to crouch, right? The further down you push a spring, the higher it's going to jump, right? The same thing, if you want to throw far, a girl throws like this, right? But you teach her how to throw, you wind up. So your first reaction is, why do I want to go back? I want to fall to go forward. But the physical world and the spiritual world is based on the idea of yirida v'tzorech aliyah, right? We need these downs in order to force us to solve the problems, to rise to a higher level, okay? And that's why it's not, even if Rav Kook is saying the most natural thing in the world is to improve, and again, if the toothpaste is improving, and sports is improving, and technology is improving, and morality is improving, the most natural thing in the world is for me to improve as well. And that's how Rav Kook looks at Shufa. Tshuva, because what's the problem? A lot of times people think it's unnatural for me to change. I am who I am, right? I talk Lashon Hara. I'm lazy. Everyone knows their shortcomings. What Rav Kook is saying is, maybe you were lazy yesterday. Does that mean you're going to be lazy for your whole life? Just, you want to improve, who's stopping you? It's the most natural thing in the world to improve. Right? A three-year-old is a beautiful thing. Right. And of younger siblings?
The neighbors.
Right? They're cute. But if a five-year-old is still acting like a three-year-old, it's a problem, right? A five-year-old's a beautiful thing. But if he's acting at the age of 10 like he was at the age of 5, he needs professional help, right? And same thing, an 18-year-old is a beautiful thing. But if he's still acting at 19 the way he was at the age of 18, and he didn't learn anything, and he didn't grow, that's unnatural. And that's what Rav Kook is saying, when Chodesh Elul comes around, Chodesh Elul is not about I'm bad, chatati, aviti, parashati. but it's positive. That's why it's called Ogotan Shufa. Right? Take a positive approach and let yourself grow. Okay? That's the first point. Interesting idea, right? Let's go on. Let's look at source 3. Here, of course, deals with the obvious question. If it's so natural to improve, so what's holding us back? Right? You all see the question. There's, okay, so now, yeah, okay, let's improve. Oh, so what's holding me back? Ha'akshanut la'amud tamid b'deya achat. The stubbornness that we have to stay status quo, to stay at the same place. And to rope ourselves, to tie ourselves into customs, into habits. A lot of people have bad habits that tie themselves and don't let them grow. Smoking is a classic example, right? It's a terrible habit. It's stupid, it's dangerous, it's expensive. Right? Nevertheless, somebody who started that habit is locked into a certain position, right? A lot of times a person is locked into an opinion, right? Somebody who grew up in a house of Republicans, right? Or a household which is racist, right? He's basically locked into that opinion. That is going to be his status quo. Okay? He machala, Rav Kook is saying that the stubbornness that we have to stay status quo and not let ourselves grow is a machala. It's a sickness. Haba mitoch shikua be'avdut kasha. It's because we're stuck in a very difficult slavery. And what is slavery? What's a slave? He has no free will. Do you remember the Rambam in Hilchot Teshuva, where the Rambam says that what is the essence of man? Do you remember the Rambam in Hilchot Teshuva?
I haven't gotten that for you.
Okay.
Doing it.
Yeah, I started. Good fun. It's very important. It's one of those things that every Bachur Yeshiva should learn about sometimes. The Rambam in the Perikei of Hilchot Teshuva, Halacha Aleph, Reshut l'chol adam netuna. Everybody has free will. Im ratza la'atot atzmo l'derech tova v'yot tzadik, gam shel b'yado. If you want to be a tzadik, nobody can stop you. V'im ratza la'atot atzmo l'derech rasha v'yot rasha, gam shel b'yado. You want to be a rasha, nobody can stop you. Hu shekatuv b'Torah, hein ha'adam haya ke'echad mimenu l'da tov hara. Klomar, hein min zeh shel adam haya yachid ba'olam ve'ein min sheni dome lo b'zeh. No other creature has free will. Right? Rocks don't have free will. Trees don't have free will. Animals don't have free will. Angels, no angels don't have free will. They're robots. They're man. The beauty of man is that he has free will. Do you ever hear Chazal say, there's a Mamar Chazal, Suma Chashuv Kemet, a blind person is considered dead, right? Or Ani Chashuv Kemet, a poor person is considered dead. The Maharal explains very nicely. The Maharal explains, what is life? It says, life is free will. And the Maharal says, that's what life is about. A slave, Nebuch, he has no free will. Now, check this out. Again, you said you have neighbors, little children. Do you ever hear the terrible twos? There's a stage when a kid is two, everything is lo rotze. No, no, don't tell me what to do. Let me do it myself. Right? And they try and dress themselves. And I have four daughters. The funniest thing is in winter, when they're at that age, 2, 3, and they try and put on their tights in the morning, and they put two legs on the right, and then two legs on the left, and two legs on the right, and then two legs on the left, and you offer to help them out. No. Why did God create us in a way that we want to do things ourselves? That's free will. That's the independence, right? And it rises another stage in adolescence. When a parent tells an adolescent, you know, would you mind cleaning your room? Maybe close the door when you come in, you know, you let the flies in, you let the air conditioning out. And there are certain things that parents tell their kids all the time.
Okay.
Now, the parent might be 100% right, but if you have younger brothers or sisters, you're the baby. But you've seen it, I'm sure, right? Don't tell me what to do, right? Where does that come from? So psychologists explain that that is the beginning of adulthood, where the child is learning what independence is, and that's what the Maharal is saying. Or what's the common denominator between a poor person and a blind person, according to the Maharal? What's he saying? That they have no
independence.
They have no independence. But the idea in the time of Chazal, what did they mean? Nebuchadnezzar can't even cross the street. A poor person can't even buy a can of Coke if he wants to, right? He has to think twice. A person who's lacking independence, his life is not a normal life. He's like voluntarily becoming a slave. Now, Rav Kook isn't only talking about somebody who's addicted to cigarettes, right? There are plenty of other people. Well, let me ask you. Can either of you think, how would a psychologist explain that phenomenon that we're talking about? That on the one hand, we want to grow, we want to be great, we want to achieve, we want to learn, right? But on the other hand, we don't feel like it. Right? On the one hand, it's natural to grow. On the other hand, there are things which are holding us back. How would a psychologist answer that question?
That's Dr. Hackhauser tomorrow. He's a good share.
Who?
Dr. Hackhauser.
Yes.
He's a green psychologist.
Oh, yeah?
So it's half a share on Thursdays.
Notice I'll let you play the psychologist. What a psychologist. Did you catch the first point? That it's natural to want to improve? Okay. So let's try and think together. What's holding us back? I want to learn all day, all night. I want greatness. I want to find a cure to cancer. Everybody has dreams.
Laziness.
Okay, number one, without a doubt, laziness. Okay, there's a certain gate setter. If we talk about the things that are holding us back from growing, laziness, that's basically, I want greatness, but I don't feel like investing the time. You ever notice the difference between what I want and what I feel like? Right? A doctor might tell you, go on a diet, right? You'll be healthier, you'll live longer, you'll look better, you'll feel better about yourself. So you want to do the diet, but you don't feel like doing it. See the difference? Okay? So that's a certain kvedut, heaviness, laziness that we have that's holding us back. What else could hold a person back from growing? Friends, peer pressure. That's what your psychologist then would say. Okay. When your peers, you know, you come back from yeshiva and you want to learn Torah. You have certain seen guys come back from yeshiva after a year or two in yeshiva and Peltel, and they're wearing their tzitzit out, and they don't want to talk Russian and Haran. You know, they change. And they come back, and their older brother will say to them cynically, you flipped out, right? You changed, inferring that it's unnatural, right? It's not you. Hey, everyone has the chevra, your peers give you a label. And it's difficult to change that label. And what is Rav Kook saying? He's saying, don't let something like your friends hold you back. If you want to grow, if you want to improve, right? Okay, so yesterday I spoke Lashon Hara. That doesn't mean that today I will, because yesterday I also was at this level. Today I'm at this level, just like technology is improving, and monkeys are improving, and toothpaste is improving. Do you all see where Cook is going? Okay, that's another point. What's another factor? Maybe Freud. If Sigmund Freud was here, ask Dr. Hachholder. What would Freud say? You heard the ego? That's a big one.
What would the ego have to say about this idea of improving?
Me? If I need to improve, that infers that I'm not Poseidon. Me? Not Poseidon? Right? Me, a holy of holies? Nobody likes to admit that they're wrong. Nobody likes to admit that they could improve. Don't you see that? And the ego, and that's the ABCs of Mussar, right? The Sifrei Mussar say that somebody who has an inflated ego is just a matter of time before a pin, just like an inflated balloon, pricks the balloon, and everybody sees it was just hot air. All right, what is an ego about? You know that you're not the greatest. Everybody else knows that you're not the greatest. Moshe, you with us? So that's, have you heard of the ego? You learned a little Freud, okay? So the ego also holds us back. A lot of times, there's a classic scenario of you're driving around with the family, you know, looking for something, and your mother says, why don't we stop and ask somebody? And your father will say, no, we'll find it. Another scenario. So Freud stresses the male ego, especially men have a stronger ego, and it's very difficult for anybody to admit, hey, I was wrong, I need to improve. That's pretty stupid to hold me back, right? It's like a balloon of hot air. That's gonna hold me back. What else? There's another big thing in psychology. Anybody ever hear of fear of the unknown? What's fear of the unknown?
Different, trying new things.
Some people are afraid to try new foods. That's like an extreme case. In little kids, it's very common. They want their hot dogs and their french fries, and that's it. I don't want to try new food. But did anybody have this on the way down on a plane ride to Israel? It's very common, like if you're on a bus ride or on a plane ride. And you know, everyone's telling you it's great. You know, if you're going to camp or you're, that's the yeshiva. It's going to be the best year of your life, which it will be, by the way. Even though it's tough and the food isn't always good, but I think almost everyone who ever lived in yeshiva will tell you that it's going to be the best year of your life. And even at the age of 40, 50, looking back, everyone will tell you that still that was the best year of my life. But when you're on the plane, or you're on the bus ride, you know, you ever get that feeling where I hope we don't get there, you know, like I have my seat, I have my window, you know. That's a fear of the unknown. And again, that's another factor. These are all factors that hold us back from growing and being ourselves. And what Rav Kook is saying, let yourself be free to be yourself. The stubbornness that people have because of their ego, because of peer pressure. What? Just because of peer pressure, that's going to withhold me from being myself by being who I want to be. I want to grow. I want to stop talking Lashon Hara. Just because the my older brother's going to laugh at me, I'm going to stop, like, change my plans. You see, people used to think before you learned Oral Tachuva, people think that if I want to change, I have to swim against the tide. I'm swimming against nature. Nature is the way I am. I'm lazy. That's my nature. Rav Kook is saying, no. The tide of the world is what? What's the key word that we've been talking about? Change, improvement. Not only change, but to improve, to change for the better. Okay? כי התשובה היא שואפת לחופש מקורי אמיתי. תשובה is an improvement which will give us total original freedom. What is Rav Kook talking about? החופש האלוהי, שאין משהו מבטות. Total godly freedom, where there's no slavery. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is 100% independent, right? Nobody can tell God what to do. You want to be guided? Be independent. Rise above your laziness. Rise above your peer pressure, your ego, your fear of the unknown. Okay? Now, one final point that we'll do today. Let's look in source 5. Where Rav Kook writes about in search of myself. The diet. I told him my doctor said I have to. I had one before. I don't have to make a bracha. Svitim nikim ibn Hashem umi Yisrael. Right? I'm dying. Orota Kodesh. Amud Kuf Mem. In search of my real self. Here Rav Kook is talking about, you know what schizophrenia is? Everybody has like a certain split personality. Right? Some days I'm idealistic, some days I'm lazy. Some days I want greatness, some days I just want to stay in bed and sleep late. You know, some days I want to wake up for a shiur, some days I just want to watch television. Right? That split personality Rav Kook is dealing with, Bakashata ni ha'atzmi, who is the real me? Who is the real Aryeh? Va'ani betoch ha'gola. Rav Kook is saying most people are in exile from themselves. Ha'ani ha'pnimi ha'atzmi, the internal me, shel ha'yachid v'shel ha'tzibur, of the individual, of the nation, אינו מתגלה בתוכיותו רק לפי ערך הקדושה והטהרה שלו. The person's real self is revealed according to the amount that he reveals his godliness. לפי ערך הגבורה העליונה, ספוגה מאורות. I'll explain to you. Rav Kook's language is, not only is it Hebrew, it's difficult Hebrew. What's he talking about? Like I said before, every person a sort of split personality, right? Sometimes you're idealistic, you act by what you want to do, and other times you don't feel like it. Okay? Now the question is, who is the real me? Now if somebody asks you, Moshe, who's the real me? Right? Well, a lot of people's first reaction would be me, right? And they point to their body. Right? Or they look in their class, high school class picture, and oh, that's me. Is that you? All right, if I am my body, does that mean that if I am losing my hair, I'm less me? Or if I'm gaining weight, I'm more me? Obviously not, right? If I get a nose job, I'm not me anymore. It's absurd. I've my older brother donated 5 years ago a kidney. To my father. So my father's walking around with my brother's kidney. Does that mean that he is my brother or my brother is him, right? Obviously not. If you think even a minute, you realize I am not my body. If so, what's the other option? Your neshama, your soul. Your nefesh, your ruach, neshama. We won't get into the small difference, but the me. Remember, Nachman Breslov said it very nicely. Nachman Breslov said, you probably heard the idea, he says that if you want to meet the Shekhinah, you want to meet God, go out to the forest. Moshe, what is there in the forest? What does it mean when he says, you want to meet God, you'll find him in the forest? What does he mean?
Exactly. All the nature stuff is his creations.
That's the Rambam. That's what the Rambam says in Perek Bet of Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah. The awesome creations of God, that convinces you that. That's the Rambam. But Nachman Breslov looks at it differently. He says, if I'm not my body, I am my neshama. And what is a neshama? A neshama is chilek eloka mimah. It's a spark of God, right? Which means that the real me is God. You see that? The real me is my neshama. Neshama is the spark of God, which means that the real me is the spark of God. So also Nachman Breslov, why is he such a big chassid of hitbodedut? You ever hear of hitbodedut? To go out in the forest and meditate. Do you see what he's saying? He's saying, why are you going to meet God in the forest? What is there in the forest that will help you meet God? Exactly. It's not what there is in the forest, it's what there isn't. In the forest, there's no distractions. You're with your godly self. And this is what's called in Hasidut, Bechinat Shabbat. What is Shabbat about? Shabbat is a day where there's no television, no computer, no car, no money. By the way, Olam Haba, so just I don't know if you ever thought of it. Why is Olam Haba called Yom Shekulo Shabbat? Olam Haba, if you want to know if you're going to enjoy it, in Hasidut they say it, and I'll tell you one thing that you'll remember for the rest of your lives. Moshe, catch this. I see that you're still jet lagged. But I'll tell you something that you shouldn't forget. In Hasidut they say that heaven and hell is the exact same place. You ever hear that before? Heaven and hell is the exact same place, but for one person, it's heaven, it's paradise. For the other, it's as boring as hell. Somebody who enjoys Shabbat is going to enjoy Yom Shekulo Shabbat, is going to enjoy Olam Haba. Because his definition of fun is not dependent on his television, on his computer, or on his car. Somebody who doesn't enjoy Shabbat, I remember when I was like 8 years old, I told my father, I don't like Shabbos. So my father said, why not? I said, because everything that's fun, you can't do. Right? Can't ride your bike on Shabbat, not supposed to play basketball on Shabbat, no television on Shabbat. Now, for an 8-year-old, that's natural, right? But if a 25-year-old, if his definition of fun is that his fun is still dependent, his pleasure is still dependent on outside things, when he gets to heaven, I hate to tell you, there's no television in heaven. There's no surfing on the web in heaven. There's no sex in heaven. There's no money in heaven. There's no cars in heaven. So if your definition of pleasure is dependent on all of those physical factors, you're going to go to heaven. It's going to be as boring as hell. Did you catch that? Heaven and hell is the same place. But for somebody who's into spiritual things, if you enjoy Shabbat, you enjoy singing, you enjoy learning, you enjoy davening, those. So for you, when you get to that place where there's nothing physical, and all you have to do is enjoy your godliness. It's like being out in the forest. Again, most people in the Western modern world run away from themselves. And that's the beauty of Shabbat. Catch up with yourself. You are not your job, you are not your money, you are not your computer, you're not your car. You are your neshama. And that's where Rav Kook is saying, "Bekashat ani atzmi." If you want to look for your real self, don't look at the guy staring at you in the mirror. Because your hair may change, it may recede, but that's not you. The real you is your neshama. And that is freedom. A lot of times, this is another factor that's holding back a lot of people. A lot of people spend their life running after the physical pleasures. And the physical pleasures, again, there's as long as it's halachically allowed, there's nothing wrong with that. But if that's going to be your definition of pleasure at the age of 70, 80, and your body isn't, you know, working as well as it used to, you're not going to have too much pleasure. How much worse will, after 120, you get to Olam Haba? You're not going to have any pleasure if it's all based on the body. Okay. So what is Rav Kook saying? You know, remember Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky? He had this affair with this girl and was almost impeached. Moshe Katsav, the president of Israel. Remember Moshe Katsav? He was convicted of rape, of forcing the secretaries to have sex with people. Now, if you were to ask Bill Clinton or Moshe Katsav or any of those clowns who basically lost all of their respect because they couldn't control their Yetzer Hara, was it worth it? Objectively, if you would have asked him before Bill Clinton, do you remember Monica Lewinsky, the Clinton-Lewinsky affair? But Moshe Katsav, okay, we'll take the Katsav. If you were to ask Moshe Katsav, beforehand, is it worth losing the presidency in order to have a half hour of pleasure? What would he say?
Probably not.
It was really stupid. Of course not. And if you were to ask him afterwards, was that smart? Was it worth it? You know what Helly's been going through for the last 3-4 years? He's been on trial, in jail, he's going to jail. What an embarrassment that is. Was it worth that half hour of pleasure? Of course not. So his whole life beforehand, he says, that's pretty stupid. To risk my career and what I want just for what I feel like doing. You see the difference? He felt like having an affair, but that's not what he wants. Do you all see the difference between what you want or what you feel like? And that's what's withholding us from being ourselves. And that's what Rav Kook is saying. If some days you feel like learning all the shas, and in other days you feel a lack of motivation, who is the real you? Rav Kook is saying, it's your neshama. The godly you is the real you. Let yourself grow. And that's what Orot HaTshuva is about. Don't let stupid things like laziness or ego or temporary pleasures or hold you back from the freedom, from the independence of being yourself. Let yourself be free. And that's what Orot HaTshuva is about. You catch that? It's a totally different way of looking at tshuva. It's not depressing. It's a positive. Optimistic. Tough.